Blog Talk Radio.
The Healing Circle is a panel composed of spiritual teacher Kat Edwards and myself, David Clark, a former social worker. We come together every week for topical discussions in which we share our experience, strength, and hope about everyday life. From depression to connection, we cover all the issues you feel and see as you walk life's sacred journey. Listeners are encouraged to call in and contribute to the show because we all have hard-earned wisdom we need to share. Join us every week at the same day and time. And for today's show, we're going to be discussing recovery from burnout, so please feel free to participate or to just listen. Let me introduce my co-host, Kat Edwards. Kat, how are you today? Kat, I can't hear you. Can you call back in? I don't know if you can hear me or not. Let me get to you on Facebook. Hold on, folks. We have technical difficulties. So anyhow, Kat is a wonderful resource for the show. We've been co-hosting the show for nearly 3 years now. And let's see here. Let me ask her to call back in. All right. So, thank God for Facebook. We can communicate that way. And we should have her live. This has happened before in just a few minutes. Okay. She says she's called back in, so let me get her. All right. Kat, can you hear me? Can I hear you?
Yes, I can.
All
I can
right.
hear you. Can you hear me?
I can. Hooray. Anyhow, we never got to hear your response to the question. How are you today?
I'm wonderful, thank you. And thanks for asking. How are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah, it's a good life. You know, the thing about life is this. It is all good, even though a lot of it doesn't feel good as we're going through it, because we're human, subject to physical, emotional, spiritual distress and that sort of thing. But what I found in my life, having come through all of that stuff, including burnout, which is today's topic, is that it's possible to recover from anything and to reach for the next best feeling. And eventually you get into a place where you once again acknowledge that life is good. What do you think?
I agree. It's like a big ship at sea. It takes a little while to change its course, but once it does and it gets its momentum going, the new direction is much better. As long as you keep doing all the proper things that you need to do to look after yourself, there is always a way out.
And once you realize that, the navigation of the ship is a little bit easier the next time, because you recognize it doesn't have to be as catastrophic as it may have seemed. And in the final analysis, as we look back on our life experiences, most of them are small potatoes. Not to say that there aren't big ones too, but we can recover from virtually anything if we choose to practice healing techniques and do some of the things that we've already talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is burnout? We're talking about burnout today, and we're talking in particular about the syndrome that is burnout. The syndrome grows with, this is from instahelp.me. I'll read you what psychologists say burnout is, and then I'll tell you what it feels like from my own experience. So it says here, this is on instahelp.me, The syndrome grows without realizing it at the beginning. That's why the symptoms of burnout show themselves more and more over time. Affected people get lost in work and forget about everything else, driven by ambition, perfectionism, and performance orientation. Such a person gets obsessed with work. While burning out more and more and feeling powerless, they forget to care for themselves. The psychic exhaustion gets overwhelming. There is no time for relaxing or leisure activities. So the person feels increasingly stressed and controlled by the circumstances. Because there are no phases of regeneration, it leads to a feeling of constant burnout. Affected people appear frustrated, stressed, and absent-minded. They are not able to relax anymore, even at night. So they tend to use calming substances, which harm them even more in the end. That's not necessarily everybody. This is just what this person has written. Now, the stages of burnout. Pressure to be the best, demotivation if no one praises. Now, that's not necessarily everybody's burnout. This person is talking about it in terms of work. The burnout that I experienced was in terms of parenthood and raising two boys with special needs and learning difficulties who are being abused behind my back. And then having to take them to a school system that in itself was abusive in the way that it was trying to help them. So I was surrounded by people who were undermining me in one way or another, and they were all pointing their finger at me to make it everything better. But I was only one person trying to hold up this freaking drama and raise these two little boys who were ultimately innocent and had difficulties of their own anyway. And at the core of it all, I love them. And I love them so deeply, no matter what shit went down, I go to bed at night and think about how much I love them. And that kept me going. The pressure to be the best in that instance was the pressure to keep it all together, the key to appease everybody who was pointing the finger at me and to give them as much of a positive experience in life as I possibly could, which at times was extremely hard. So more actions wanting to be the best and forgetting of self-care. I think for me, this number two stage of burnout the person is talking about, I had them in a routine and I kept up appearances with them and with myself physically, like clean clothes, well-groomed, over-the-top well-groomed. I was extremely well-groomed. And that, for someone like me, is a sign, hang on, you're not relaxed in the way that you look. You look too put together. That was a sign of me trying to keep it together, at least on the outside. If you didn't break down that wall, you wouldn't see how much shit was really going on. After a while, it got to the point that the self-care, I couldn't keep up the self-care, and that's when I got to using walls to hold me up so I could walk. So it wasn't until I got to that point there. Otherwise, anyone who looked at me from the outside in had no idea. The number three here, neglecting their own needs, breaks social contracts, things like that. Yeah, I put myself last, absolutely. That was because there was no time for me. There was only time to sort this situation, which went on for years. It was chronic. It wasn't going away. They were in childhood. It was going to continue until at least they got into high school, and then it might release as their brains got bigger and as they got too big to be treated the way they were at school by the teachers who were supposed to be there to look after them. And that's a whole other conversation. repressed needs and conflicts, results of failures, being late and even more conflicts. They're number four in the stages of burnout. I was always late for everything. Repressing my own needs and having conflicts, possibly, but what it was more like was toxic people all around me. And I ended up finding out that even people that I thought were my friends were not. And I found that the best thing to do was just to withdraw. And I ended up socially isolated and I ended up agoraphobic. So your burnout and the circumstances of it can lead to secondary issues. And that's something that you have to be very, very aware of. So number five here, values, getting a new meaning, feeling numb, work is more important than relationships. I think for me it was the feeling numb. And the number six, denying of problems, social distancing, cynicism, impatience, aggression. I don't think I could deny the situation. I just tried to keep up appearances so nobody who knew me would know that this was going on because I had my pride. Social withdrawal, definitely had that. Change in behaviour. I'd say I went from somebody who was happy most of the time because I was happy in my life and what I was doing to somebody who was extremely depressed, withdrawn and agoraphobic. I also did smoke pot, which helped me to not feel lonely, but I no longer needed that after a little while. You do not, number nine, she says here, you do not feel yourself anymore, feel controlled by your life and not the other way around. I would agree with that. Number 10, feeling numb, discouraged, fear and panic, compensatory satisfaction gets prevalent. Feeling numb, definitely, discouraged, absolutely. Fear and panic. I don't know about the panic, though. I did not feel any. I did not have panic attacks. Fear. I'd say that was survival mode. Survival mode would be the way to put that. Exhaustion, despair, thoughts of suicide, depression. Yes, to all of them, but not until I had come out of the worst of it. And I found people were still being horrible to me, even though I'd actually had success. I'd finally come out of it. My eldest son had graduated high school with awards and was able to go on a tertiary education. And my other son had to have a little bit of time away from the house and the family because he had unfortunately been influenced by a lot of the toxic people, but I had had some success even with him, and I had removed myself from all the toxic people to that point. Still a lot of negativity towards me, and so those thoughts of suicide certainly were there at that time. What got me out of them was going into my heart and thinking about the people that I'd devoted my life to and that it wouldn't be fair to them. Complete burnout, emotional, mental, emotional, physical breakdown. Yes. So the feeling of burnout would come on as absolute exhaustion. So I'd get up, my routine would be, I'd get up at 7, 6.30. I'd get the kids in the car at 8. I'd drive them to school, and then on the way home, I'd fight the fatigue to the point that my eyes were rolling in the back of my head. I'd often have to pull over and have catnaps on the way home. And by the way, the drive home was only a 10-minute drive. I'd work my way home that way, get into bed, have the alarm set for 1:30, get up, shower, eat, get in the car, go back, find somewhere to park until the bell went, go in and get the kids, deal with whatever the teacher's going to throw at me at the time, which I often did, bring the kids home, give them afternoon tea, settle them down from 4 to 5, go back to bed, get up at 6, at 5, cook dinner, get them organized, get them fed, showered, and into bed by 8:30, and then go back to bed, rinse and repeat. So that was it until my doctor said, no more, you can't do this. You have to have to let the father look after the children and go to bed all the time. You're unable to look after your children. You're totally burnt out. So that was my experience of burnout. So did you ever go through any experience of coming into burnout, David?
Oh yes. I've come into it and I've come out of it. I've gone way deep into it. And as you were talking about the different stages of burnout, I Googled the two, and it's interesting because there are two different versions of 12 stages of burnout that are different than what you, somewhat different from what you have, and then 5 stages of burnout. For me, just backing up a little bit, it's interesting. When I was a teenager, I was overly responsible and an overachiever. And I was able to do so much without burning out because at that point in time I had not gone into addiction, which really accelerated my symptoms of burnout. Just to give you an example of what I was doing at the time, I worked 20 hours a week. I went to school full time. I was president of this, that, and the other organization, literally. I acted in plays that required rehearsals a couple times a week. I was in 2 different choirs. I took piano lessons, voice lessons, and I don't know what else. But looking back, I don't know how I did that, and I have not done anything like that since then. Now, I have experienced burnout on a number of different levels. The most profound has been psychological and emotional burnout, and a lot of that was due to chemical imbalances within me, having a bipolar disorder. But it was also exacerbated by the way I dealt with my relationships and with addiction, and then there was work burnout. Now, just backing up to the emotional, psychological stuff, I cheated on partners, and along with the chemical imbalance, that took me into a place of fierce depression and suicidal ideation. And like you, I realized that it would not be fair to my loved ones to leave a corpse for them to deal with, and all of the emotional distress that would cause them. Now, excessive ambition is something I certainly have had, and that also exhibited itself in the workplace, and I'm going to talk about work burnout now. I would push myself to work harder. I was an overachiever. I had the reputation of being one of the best caseworkers in my agency, and I did a lot more than what I observed my coworkers doing, and my reward for doing that was that I received higher caseloads than them, and I stayed on top of them once I learned a system of dealing with things, because initially I found myself in the civil service situation where there was so much paperwork in addition to dealing with the actual face-to-face dealing with clients. I had a very difficult time keeping up with paperwork, but I developed a system and became organized and did it, and I saw all of these other workers yakking and chatting and not keeping up with their paperwork, having lower caseloads, and that created resentments, and that's another story. But I was neglecting my personal care and personal needs in that I did not find a lot of fun things and stress busters to do in my off hours. And so I would take my job home with me. And what I did for years was I would drink away my problems, which they would only come back fiercer, more fiercely, when I went back to work the next day. And then I would come home and repeat the cycle, and I would try to drink away my problems. And it didn't work very well. So I was neglecting myself, my personal care, my needs. My personal life was becoming unmanageable. And, I must say that there were changes in my values to validate my self-worth, because I would beat myself up when I was working harder and becoming more distressed and more burnt out. Initially, there was denial of problems, and I felt a lot of shame. And shame did a lot of nasty things to me, including driving my addictions. I found myself withdrawing from friends. I really, really just was at a point where I wanted to give up. And the way I came out of it was recognizing that I had to take care of myself, that it was important for me to find outlets. It was important for me to remember the strengths that I'd possessed. And this gets back to what I was discussing at the outset of the show. I realized, after I'd been through burnout a couple of times, that I didn't need to, I realized what was dysfunctional for me. And as I said, I developed more outlets for myself. As I was coming out of addiction, I wasn't self-medicating and going into this place of self-denial and shame. Let's see, what else do I want to say? I guess that's about it for now. Although the relationship part of it, I should address that too. I was very codependent in my relationships, and less so in relationships with people, and very codependent in the relationship that I am in at present. I recognized that I was the one that set myself up for that by creating a dependency in my partner, my husband, to not grant him the dignity of taking better charge of his own life, because I would do things for him which would create more dependency, and it became a vicious cycle. And it caused me to go back into some forms of addiction that were dysfunctional for me. It caused me to develop resentments, which are dysfunctional. And I've gotten pretty good at dealing with letting go of resentments, and I was taught a lot of that in 12-step programs. But still, I would have them and have to let go of them, and I let go of them pretty quickly. But resentments are toxic and not helpful to relationships. And I got to the point in my current relationship where I had to say, time out, you've got to leave. I cannot deal with this situation as it is anymore. And so I separated from my husband. And so that's, in a nutshell, my experience with burnout. And what I would say to people that are experiencing it now is to take time to take care of yourself and let go of the feeling that you need to be responsible for more than your share, and that if you're in a situation at work where you're burning out, to take a look at what you have done to create that situation, and then take steps to undo it, and to recognize or realize that it's possible to get out of that, and just listen to other people, find support from other people who've been through it, who've experienced that, and get suggestions on how to create more self-care, have more fun, delegate responsibility, not take on more than your share, and those are some of the things I would suggest. So that's what I have to say. And we do have Al on the line, and I know Al, and I know that he has been through burnout situations. So I'd like to bring him on the line and see what he has to say, what his insights are, and what his own experience has been. So, Al, I'm coming to you, and you are live.
Oh, hi, David and Kat. I guess my burnout situation was with my work life. I had a very difficult job. My first job as a career job was a very difficult job, and there were a lot of different kinds of demands with the jobs. It was like it was having to be accountable to a lot of different aspects of my job, with a tremendous amount of paperwork, and generally they were always mostly stressful situations. And anybody I've ever worked with is always, you know, I've always been seen as a responsible worker and somebody who worked hard, so I kind of fit that profile for the burnout. And I think sometimes instead of noticing that it was the structure of the job that was a problem, I think at first I thought that if I only did the job more efficiently or in a different way, that it would be more manageable. And that just wasn't true of that job. There was not a way to really do it efficiently. But I think, you know, if you're a certain personality, you tend to see the problem as yourself first rather than the situation. And I didn't even really notice that I was stressed. It's kind of like the frog in the boiling water, the slowly warming water, not noticing that, you know, it's become boiling. And my eldest sister started commenting to me about how wound up and tense I seemed. And she's always been observant. And I started noticing it in myself, and I started trying to make moves to get out of that job and go to another area in my department that had less paperwork requirements, less accountability to so many different aspects of the job. And, you know, I was able to make that move, and it did help. I still was in a stressful job, but not as stressful as the one I'd been in before. And that was a big help to get out of this. And I think, you know, I dealt with some of that stress by drinking after work, you know, going out to happy hours and watching maybe some inane television. I think when you're under a lot of stress and you're experiencing burnout, you want to watch something that is light and distracting, that takes you away from your feelings, which is probably not a good idea, because I think it's a good idea to just notice what you're feeling and the effect that what you're experiencing is having on you. And I wasn't really noticing that. I wanted to be the good employee, you know, and, I wanted to be the competent person. And I had kind of the same experience David did, you know, noticing other people that weren't trying as hard. And I, actually, even later in later jobs, I I had other jobs given to me because I was a competent employee that I didn't see, because I was supervising later in my career. And in addition to supervising, I was given these other projects and other programs to monitor that I didn't see other people, you know, that were my same level getting. I don't know if that's maybe that's a part of the burnout that you don't notice what's happening to you. You don't notice your own circumstances so well, and you don't speak up for yourself. I guess, well, you know, they talked about not being able to prioritize your needs, I think, was one of those stages. And maybe it's just not being able to prioritize ourselves is part of the problem. So I think sometimes dealing with burnout is, if you can, is just getting out of that situation, because there's some situations that even if you get better at taking care of yourself, you're never going to be able to do that adequately in the situation you're in unless you get out of it. And that's what I did with that first job, and I never regretted it. I think my stress levels went down. You know, if I still was in stressful jobs. I did have an interim job that was not stressful. And the interesting thing was that, I don't know what this is, maybe this says something about my personality too. It wasn't so stressful, but it was a lot less stressful than earlier and later jobs that I had, but it just felt so inane to me sometimes. I wanted something more challenging, and I hated the quibbling about things that were not so important, because I'd had jobs where the issues were much more important than this particular job I had in the middle. And I actually brought myself back into a situation with a job that was more stressful, but I was happier, actually. You know, I think because I felt like I was doing something more meaningful. So although there was more stress on me and it could lead to more burnout, I was actually a little happier having made that move. And, you know, I'm a retired guy now, and I kind of wondered who I was going to be and how I would feel not having a job or a career, you know, and being in retirement. And I don't miss any of it. I think once you're retired, you really have a perspective you don't have when you're still working, because you look back and you wonder, how did I ever do that? When you look back at it, you know, and it's part of it is that, you know, we have to. I mean, we have to have a job. We have to have money. We have to be able to afford our lives, you know, and we're forced into occupations sometimes that we don't necessarily, or jobs, rather, that we don't necessarily want to do. So, just removing yourself from us, even if it's not retirement, just having an opportunity to remove, maybe a vacation, you know, or a long vacation, or having an opportunity to remove yourself even temporarily from a situation so you can notice the difference by, you know, in how you're feeling when you're away from it and how you feel when you're there. So that's all I wanted to say, I think. Thank you.
Thank you, Al. You know, I think you made an important point, and that is what I was perceiving you talking about was a rather toxic situation that you removed yourself from. And I think it's important for people when they're going through burnout to recognize that they've become a victim in a sense. In a sense, I mean, not always, but we can create situations or view situations as if we are powerless, and we never are powerless. And I think that anything that is toxic is soul damaging. It really is destructive to our life force, and it is possible to make a change, a substantive change, to rearrange things so that we are not in that situation. And I know that for me, retirement came suddenly, and I didn't even realize how burnt out I was becoming yet again on the job that I was describing as a social worker. And it was a wonderfully freeing thing because I discovered that even though the method and the situation that I encountered upon retirement and how it came about was unpleasant, that I discovered a whole new field of interest for myself. And I really spent a lot of time writing books, sometimes working 10 and 12-hour days, but it was doing something that I enjoyed that fulfilled me and made me feel happy. And I really valued what you had to say, and I'd like to see what Kat has to say at this point.
Yeah, both of you have got really important stories about how you became burnt out, and the number one thing that you did was you recognized the source of the burnout, and you did something about it. And in my situation, I knew the source of the burnout, and I could only do something about some of it. But it was still important to do something about that, the aspects of it that I could do. And then the aspects of it that I could not change became a little bit more manageable. And so everybody's experience of burnout is going to be different in different situations. But the one thing that happens is that you end up having a serious chronic health condition because it affects you on all levels of your being. And you can end up, it's like you've been chronically tormented and victimized and bullied, but it's been by a situation that you've been in, and therefore also the people who were in that situation with you and the circumstances, rather than having been kidnapped and put into an acute issue or something similar. It's a chronic long-term decline. So making those changes so that you can either completely remove yourself or at least regain some control and be able to deal with what's on your plate a little bit better is so, so important. But I think that finding someone to talk to is one really, really important step that you have to make. And the good thing about psychologists and counselors is that they have to keep it a secret. And they're removed from your life. They're somebody completely separate. You do not see them down the shops. You do not see them in your neighborhood. They're not going to mix with the people that you're dealing with. You can go and see them. You can blurt it all out. You can cry. You can get your head around the situation incrementally as you go to talk to them. And if they're properly trained, they will give you tools to help you to deal with it. And so talking to someone is a step that is so important. And I did that throughout my burnout experience, and I would recommend anybody to get on and do that. I did not do it enough, though. I should have done it more, but I certainly did do it. So when you're moving through this, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. You're not going to suddenly go, oh, I was burnt out, now I'm good. It might take you a year to 5 years to recover, and or even 10, depending on how chronic and harrowing the situation was that you went through. it might take you a long time. You may even find that some aspects of your nervous system may never recover. I know that for myself. There are just some things in my nervous system that get triggered, and there's always that feeling of I have to be guarded a little bit because I've got this vulnerability in my nervous system. So I need to do things to find ways to build up my resilience so that I can care for that aspect of myself that, and it's a physiological aspect that has been weakened to the point that it can only repair incrementally over years and years and years. So it's not an easy road to recovery, but you can and you will recover if you look after yourself. So once you've got that point, you've identified why you're exhausted, why you're burnt out, you make changes, and then you start to talk to somebody. Then you can examine your options, and that'll probably happen during the talking process. It's not straightforward. If you're in a job, you've got to find another job, and you've got to find a job that pays you as well as the one that's been burning you out so that you can maintain the cost of living and your lifestyle. But you've got to find a job that doesn't burn you out the way this job did. So, you know, it's not easy to just simply walk out and into something new. In my situation, we had to grow away from certain people. It didn't matter which school we went to because we were in a school system that had a certain attitude. I couldn't get away from it. I could say stop and I could give my reasons, but that didn't change policy. And the people that were around me that were undermining me, I could move away from some of them and not others. And then I needed certain events to happen, which did come to pass, which meant that I could put a full stop on the main perpetrators. So you've got to examine your options and start to make a plan. And that's part of getting control and feeling in control. And it's very hard when you're at a point where you're so tired, you're so spent, you feel so powerless and victimized that you don't feel like you've got anything in you to do it. And that's why talking to somebody might help you to feel better, to help you take control by making that plan together and then having somebody accountable who will help you get through it. And, you know, that's something that someone like me, a life coach, can do. And that's if they're properly trained. Not a fly-by-night life coach, look into them, make sure they're properly trained. They will actually have psychosocial education, psychotherapy education, I should say, and they will help you to take back control. So prioritize the things that have to get done, delegate the things that you don't need to do, and don't put pressure on yourself. The washing up can wait. Triage your life, basically. When you go to a doctor's surgery, they triage the patients, the emergency patients, from most important, nearly going to die, to least important, they've got a cut and it's had some first aid, we'll see them last to sew it up. You've got to triage your life to prioritize and delegate. One of the things I saw actually on Dr. Phil was that he says he finishes work and then he goes and exercises to get, firstly, an hour gap between himself and his home, but also to get rid of any pent-up frustration, energy that doesn't suit his family life from work, any thoughts, anger, tiredness or any kind of negative thoughts that he's got about work, he would go and play tennis for an hour, have a shower, and then get home. And then he'd be right for his family. So find something to do immediately after work, if you, it is your work that's causing the burnout, that switches you from work mode to family mode or home mode, and expends the energy that's being built up during the day that's causing you problems. But don't bring work home. That's a big no-no, because you may find yourself continuing to work until 11 o'clock at night, and then having a shower, and going to bed, get up, rinse and repeat. This is very dangerous to somebody who works for themselves, having been in that situation myself. It's too easy to do all the things that help everybody else function in the day as a parent, and then go to work, and because you work from yourself, go home and then continue to work once everyone's in bed. It's too easy to just get into a routine of never having any time off. So you have to set boundaries. You have to set boundaries within yourself and for others towards you. And you need to be firm about them, and you need to be firm about your needs. So important to set boundaries. And be compassionate towards yourselves. We can be too hard on ourselves, especially if we're perfectionists. David and I are both perfectionists. We've talked about this on the show a few times, haven't we, David? So you've got to be compassionate towards yourself. And it's easy to be compassionate towards others, but now's the time to look after you. So love and support yourself. Imagine that you were a friend who was going through this. How would you approach your friend? Approach yourself in the same way. So pay attention to your needs. To get exercise, it increases endorphins, but physical health isn't just exercise. Go and see a dietitian and get your diet sorted out, because guaranteed it's gone out the window. You've just been having cheap, easy food. Whatever you can buy from takeaway or pick up on the way to work or whatever, you need to actually make an effort and plan ahead with your diet and start to really put it in. I think the key is self-love, and diet is part of that self-love that you really have to put into yourself during this time. So it's not just sleep. It's more than that. Relaxation also involves stretching. That's why yoga is so good. But if you can't do yoga, at least stretch. Stretching is so important. It releases all the tension that's built up in the sinew and the tendons. And it also releases a lot of the emotional tension that's built up in the cells, in the water in your cells. And you may find after a bit of a stretch you have a cry, and that's because the water, in the emotion in the water is being released through the stretching. If you go and get a massage, which I recommend Kahuna massage for this, because this is, I've found it to be incredibly good at releasing emotions. And if they're properly trained Kahuna massage therapists, they'll definitely be able to do it. They know just how, where the emotions, they can actually tune into your body and feel where there's a trapped energy, and they will press on you and release it. You might find yourself swearing at them on the massage table, and they think good because you're getting that release, and you've got to have it. You've got to have it. So finally, what makes you happy? One of the things that I knew I was going towards burnout, but it was a momentum. I could not stop at that point. But I tried different things to try and curtail it. And one of them was I fed my boys early, and then we went for a walk down to the beach. And it was summer. The days were longer. And I'd let them run, and we'd all get the negative ions. and it was better. So find something that makes you happy. Get out and go and do something that makes you happy. Get into hobbies. Gardening. Do something that takes your mind completely off the situation and into something else that gives you a sense of achievement, but also self-love, because you're accessing that part of yourself that you love. Read a book in the bathtub. Do something that makes you feel like you're loving you. Don't go back into wallowing too much in the mud that has caused the burnout. Catch yourself. Self-awareness, I think, has been a major key in my turnaround, an absolute major key. It's something that I started to practice when I was in my early 20s. I started to become aware of what I was saying. But as I got further on down this rabbit hole, I began to realize that this self-awareness situation was actually what was saving me from becoming a complete train wreck, because I could catch myself and become aware of when I was having bad thoughts about myself. Regrets playing like a broken record in my head, and I would hear them and see them and know that they were there. Okay, I've got to do something about this. I can't do this anymore. They're maddening. I became afraid to be alone because in my mind I had all the voices of all the negative, toxic, judgmental people yelling at me. And so instead of letting them control me, I said, okay, I am aware this is happening because I'm aware of all of these people. Now, what is it they're actually saying? And am I addressing it? And I sat down and started to think about that, and I realized, yes, I was, but they couldn't see that I was, and that's their fault, not mine. So I took control.
Okay,
and then those voices lessened. Yeah, you go.
I'm going to jump in and just ask you to finish your thought, honey, because we're running out of time.
Okay, yeah. So take control and go and talk to somebody. That's the main thing. All right, I'm done.
Well, thank you. You know, what I really loved about your share just now was that you offered so many possible solutions. And that is, I think, so important in terms of dealing with burnout. And I think also I was reflecting on the fact that we suffered from different types of burnout. And, in a sense, there was more that Al and I could do about work-related burnout than you could do in your personal situation. And so I loved the suggestions you had, and it does seem like it all boils down to self-care and self-love. And I wondered how you'd feel about doing a show on self-care.
I think that would be good.
Next week?
Let's do that.
Okay, wonderful. Well, let's move into meditation. We just have 6 minutes left. So I ask you to take a moment to relax, shake whatever physical distress you have out of your system, shake your hands, move your legs, tighten your muscles, relax them, and then close your eyes if you're comfortable. Get comfortable in your seat. If you don't want to close your eyes, focus on a spot in the room and just begin to breathe deeply. And take 3 deep breaths. Now imagine yourself standing in front of the elevator doors and not knowing which way to go because you've forgotten where you are, who you are, and you push the down button unselfconsciously or unknowing that that's the direction you've chosen to go. And so you step onto the elevator. And as you're in the elevator, you begin to sense this feeling of descent, physical, emotional, spiritual, and you begin to descend physically in the elevator. And at first, your knowledge of your other decline, you're not aware of it because you have not practiced self-awareness. And that's okay. That's part of the human experience. So you're descending into the state of lack of awareness. And as you descend, you start to experience a lot of different uncomfortable feelings. You begin to feel disconnected. You begin to feel powerless. You begin to feel like you're a victim. You begin to lose touch with what is real, what is important, and that is you. And as you continue to descend, you suddenly have a moment, a glimmer of awareness that this is not right, that this should not happen, seemingly should not happen, but it's part of the human experience. And you become in touch with your humanity. You become in touch with the power that you might possess as you begin to see a glimmer of the light at the end of the tunnel. And slowly, the elevator comes to a stop. But you choose not to open the door. Instead, you push the up button, and you begin to rise physically, and you begin to grasp on to that feeling of hope, that feeling of power, that feeling that all is well. It comes very slowly at first. It comes very slowly. But you recognize that there's a solution to every problem, and usually more than one. And with that awareness, you begin to change your perspective. You begin to be filled with a power greater than yourself, which is restoring you to a place of sanity. And you continue to rise and rise and rise until the elevator doors open. And you're surprised because you're not where you started. You're at the top of the building. And the sky is blue, the sun is shining, and you feel just so wonderful, so filled with gratitude that you have, through your own power, the power within that comes from God knows where, that you have overcome an obstacle that seemed insurmountable. And so you step out of the elevator and you hold up your hands to the skies and you give thanks. You give thanks that you have recovered who you truly are a powerful being. You are pure spirit contained in a human body that has feelings. And you give thanks for all of that. Because this is the life you're living now. This is the life that you've chosen. And this is the moment. And so, when you're ready, open your eyes and look around you and remember that feeling of power and of gratitude that has brought you to this next moment. And so, with that said, good day, good night to all. join us again next week, and please join us on our Facebook page, and I'm going to ask Kat to describe that. Kat, are you still with me?
Yeah, sorry, I had myself on mute there.
Oh, no problem.
Join us on the Healing Circle with David Clark and Kat Edwards on Facebook. That's our Facebook page. And there you can find podcasts of our previous episodes. You can also make comment on episodes if you like. You can send us a message or write to us somehow other way, which you'll find all the ways to write to us on the Facebook page. Tell us what you would like us to discuss in the show. Keeping to the show's genre, please, and remembering we're not investigative journalists. We're just two friends who have had interesting life experiences, and we both walk a spiritual path, and we have education in psychotherapy. So the two of us work together quite beautifully, and we love to talk about things that you like to think about. So send us a line and give us a topic. And you'll find us same time, same place, unless something happens, like the passing of one of our animals or one of us is sick or something. Our show is always on at USA North American time, 4 p.m. at the moment, Eastern Daylight Savings Time. And at 6 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on Mondays, and I should have said Tuesdays at 4 p.m. No, on Tuesday, you're Monday. I'm confusing myself. Say that again. Monday at 4 p.m. North American Eastern Daylight Saving Time, Tuesday, 6 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Okay.
And God bless those who get up at 6 a.m. Thank you.
Yes.
And Kat, good day to you. And I'm going to have a nice, relaxing evening because I'm not going to burn out today. And I do not intend to burn out again because I have tools today.
Beautiful.
And thank you for offering those tools.
And thanks for the show. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Okay. Take care, hon.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.